We have a lot of things that we want to catch people up with, and so you're tuned to exactly the right place. We've got national stuff, including Donald Trump just won another victory. We'll get to it in just a moment. We got international stuff. German voters go to the polls this weekend. This could be a pivotal election that could affect all of European politics. And in many ways, it's a replay of the American election of a couple of few months ago. We also, while we're talking about international issue, Hamas, utterly depraved barbarians. And the last of the what they did yesterday, basically throwing a party while displaying the coffins of two small children, an infant and a four-year-old, along with the coffin of their mother, and having a party while displaying the coffins. All three of them had been captured alive. All three of them were alive when they were taken. A helpless infant, a four-year-old boy, and their mom. They were returned dead. And now we learn that the body inside the mother's coffin wasn't even hers, nor was it any other hostage. These people are just beyond ill. And when the last of the living hostages come home tomorrow, I hope Israel levels every person associated with Hamas. Just be done with them. This is a sick, sick movement. And I'll tell you something interesting that's going on here. Several leading Islamic leaders in other countries have also gone out of their way to criticize Hamas for this latest spectacle. What do you want to bet that they're really giving Israel the green light to go in and just finish Hamas? Just finish them. You're associated with the Hamas's fighting force, you're gone. You're not arrested, you're gone. You're associated with Hamas's government and political leadership, gone. Just be finished with them. Let Islamic radicals throughout the Arab world and, frankly, everywhere else, let them know that this is your future. When you try and call for the eradication of Jews and you try and drive them out and you target children, infants, their mothers, civilians, you're gone. You're done. You know, the Western elites had always, you know, wrung their hands and say, well, if you go after Hamas, you're just going to unite the Arab world around them. No, that ain't happening. In fact, quite the opposite. Not a single Arab country has allied itself with Hamas. This is the terror group operating in Gaza to the south, the west of Israel, actually southwest within Israel. And Egypt and Jordan, the closest Arab countries, of course, to Gaza, they won't take refugees. They don't want them in their own country. They don't want Palestinian Muslims in their own country. Arab Muslims say, keep the Palestinian Muslims out of here because they don't want Hamas in their country. So I believe that the Arab world is actually giving Israel the green light to, you know, just be done with these Iranian-sponsored barbarians. The worst of the worst, the lowest of the low. Take them out, and I hope Israel will. All right, that's, again, one of the international issues. We also, of course, have some local issues happening on the John Carlson Show. We have a serial car thief, and I'm talking about dozens of arrests, many convictions, many, I think, almost half a dozen outstanding warrants against him, caught stealing cars, brought before the judge, released on his own recognizance, wasn't even required to post bail. We'll tell you about that case as well. But the first case I want to talk about is Donald Trump wins a victory, a pretty big one. U.S. District Judge Christopher Cooper, an Obama appointee, announced yesterday that he would not grant a motion from public employee unions trying to prevent the Trump administration from mass layoffs the federal workforce. The judge says that their legal complaint was really an employment dispute, and you don't take employment disputes to court as a first resort. Now, again, Cooper is an Obama appointee, and he said that the first month of the president's term, quote, has been defined by an onslaught of executive actions that have caused, some say by design, disruption and even chaos in widespread quarters of American society. But the judge went on to write that judges are, quote, duty-bound to decide legal issues based on even-handed application of law and precedent, no matter the identity of the litigants or, regrettably at times, the consequences of their rulings on average people. The unions, which represent hundreds of thousands of federal workers, claim that Donald Trump's effort to slash the federal workforce is in conflict with Congress's power to shape the size and direction of agencies through funding decisions, as well as laws that detail how these layoffs must be carried out. The lawsuit is among, get this, more than 80 lawsuits now filed against the Trump administration for various actions they've undertaken. That's just fine. Let them sue. This is the second time in 2 days that a liberal judge, one appointed by Obama, one appointed by Biden, in the nation's capital has turned away challenges to the president's power. The first was DOGE, and the second is the layoffs of federal bureaucrats on the grounds that the president's not doing anything illegal. He's definitely doing things that are unconventional. Unconventional isn't illegal. Illegal is illegal. And the Trump people are on the right side of the law. So, again, DOGE goes forward, the layoffs go forward, and Donald Trump takes another victory lap. By the way, here's a federal bureaucrat who wasn't fired but was promoted. The news media gave a lot of news coverage to the head of the Social Security Administration. She was the acting Social Security Commissioner. Her name is Michelle King. And she would not cooperate with DOGE, with Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, to conduct an audit of the Social Security Administration to see where there was waste they could get at. What they were trying to get at is how many people are getting checks who don't deserve checks because they are dead or their whereabouts cannot be accounted for. When she left, the media mentioned that a guy named Leland Dudek would be named acting Social Security Commissioner in her stead. Okay? Here's what they didn't tell you. Leland Dudek was being teed up to be fired from the Social Security Administration because he cooperated with DOGE. And the Trump administration decided to make an example of him in a positive way, promoting him over dozens of people with more seniority to now be the acting head of the agency. So Leland Dudek, who is a conscientious federal bureaucrat, he wants to prevent waste. And when his boss saw that Elon Musk, on behalf of President Trump, was coming to town, he was told not to cooperate. Mr. Dudek saw no reason why he shouldn't be allowed to, other than his boss's opposition. And they suspended him. Quote, at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, my boss called me to tell me I've been placed on administrative leave pending an investigation. They want to fire me for cooperating with DOGE, he wrote in a post, social media post, that has now been deleted. And then he posted the following after he was promoted. He said, I confess. I helped DOGE understand the Social Security Administration. I mailed myself publicly accessible documents, and I explained them to DOGE. I confessed. I move contractor money around to add data science resources to my anti-fraud team. I confess. I asked where the fat was and where the fat is in our contracts so we can make the right tough choices. I confess, wrote Leland Dudek. I bullied agency executives and shared executive contact information and circumvented the chain of command to connect DOGE with the people who get stuff done. Everything I've ever done is in service to our country, our beneficiaries, and our agency. Mr. Dudek was a senior general schedule employee, which is basically the top of the second tier. And when the Trump administration saw that he was being punished for cooperating and helping them find waste and fraud, they elevated him to the top job. He is now the acting commissioner and has sent an email to the staff saying that he will lead the Social Security Administration, quote, in an open and transparent manner. His first call went to the Social Security Administration's Inspector General's office. Transparency is at the heart of good government, he said. Since he has been promoted, DOGE officials now have open access to the agency's enterprise data warehouse. That is, according to people who are familiar with the matter, it's their centralized database that includes records on individuals who've been issued a Social Security number or who have applied for or received Social Security benefits. Basically, what they're trying to do is ensure that the people who are getting Social Security are entitled to receive Social Security. Even MSNBC, hardly a fan of the Trump administration, even they reported that there has been $72 billion in improper payments over an 8-year period, and that's without a comprehensive search. That was just an audit by the Inspector General. $72 billion. So every once in a while, the good guys win. And by the way, let Leland Dudek's story not only be an example of Trump recognizing that there are good people in government, but let us all remember there are a lot of good people who work in government. They are conscientious. They are hardworking. They focus on serving the public, doing their job. And we need to remember that. And we need to reward good service and call it out and praise it when it happens. Young Zach Reddy with the first social media sweep of the morning.
Good morning, John. On the social media sweep brought to you by the Muckleshoot Casino Resort. I thought Friday would be a good time for a laugh. You know my affinity for clean stand-up comedy. We've shared before, yes. You know, my love of Nate Bargatze, who's been taking off lately. And there's another comedian coming to town actually this weekend, tonight and tomorrow.
He was in the SNL Saturday Night Live 50th anniversary show.
Yeah,
Nate Bargatze?
Bargatze.
Bargatze. I had no idea who this guy was. And then Zach comes in and says he went to his show. And I said, where was it? Thinking it was some comedy club, 200, 300. But it was like 5,000 people went to see him.
It was like 13. It was the Angel of the Winds arena.
Oh, it was
arena.
Angel of the Winds. Okay.
Sold out.
Yeah, you're right.
Twice.
That's much bigger. Okay, 13,000 people went to see him.
Yeah. Insane. So this guy runs in the same circle. He's on a podcast with Nate, and he will be here in Tacoma, actually down south tonight and tomorrow. Tomorrow's shows are all sold out. It looks like there's some tickets left for the shows tonight. I'm going tomorrow. Here's a little clip of what he does.
I got real sick last year. I had to go to urgent care, get it fixed up. I don't know if y'all been to urgent care before, but I like it. Go check it out. It's fun in there. I like it. I like it better than a real doctor. There's a good feeling at an urgent care. There's no ego. You know, a doctor talks down to you. Diplomas on the wall. He's like, I went to school. I know everything. Urgent care is like, do you have $40? Let's figure this out together, dude. We don't know any more than you, right? Why don't we put our heads in a room? And we'll tackle this sinus infection as a team. And I like that. There's camaraderie in an urgent care. I don't know if anybody's qualified, and that's a rush. You know how at these places, you fill out all your info in the lobby on like a clipboard, and then they take you to another room and act like you never did that? So the nurse comes in. She's asking me questions face to face. She's writing down my answer. She goes, what are you in for? I said, my nose is clogged. She said, have you been taking anything? I said, nah, just Sudafed. And she goes, can you spell that for me? I was like, Sudafed? I maybe could. I would like you to take a stab at it, though, right? That feels like one of the ones you should know. I know y'all share a lease with a T-Mobile store, but this feels like day one stuff. Look, I've been taking ibuprofen as well, so maybe I sounded that one out. You could write that down phonetically.
So this is the kind of humor where you just smile throughout. Okay, no guffaws, no laugh out loud moments, at least not for me, but you just kind of smile throughout.
Well, and it's all free of, there's no politics. You're not going to go and, well, I like some of his jokes, but then he went into a Trump segment. You're not going to get any of that. It's all clean, family comedy. I laugh out loud, but that's just, he just did the Tonight Show earlier this month.
Oh, wow.
And he's got a special out on YouTube right now called Signature Dish, which is actually about the Seattle dog. Funny enough. So I'll let you look that up on YouTube and figure it all out.
And again, this is who?
Aaron Weber.
Aaron Weber, who's in the same league with Nate Bargatze.
Correct.
All right. All right. Very good. So you start off the social media moment with a few minutes of humor.
I try.
Very good. Very good. By the way, you've been doing a great job this week.
Oh, thank you, John. Yes.
So the President of the United States issued an executive order calling for the elimination of DEI policies from government and all businesses, entities, schools, institutions of higher learning getting funding from government. Basically, diversity, equity, and inclusion programs are inherently discriminatory because they magnify the importance of race rather than minimize it, which is the bedrock principle of civil rights. And then they treat people differently because of race and deliberately, in some cases, create division and divisiveness. They replace, again, the core principle of equality, treat people the same, regardless of their race, their gender, their religion, etc. Replace equality with equity, which is everyone ends up in the same place. And if you have to treat people differently to get there, you do it. So a number of activists in government or in entities that contract with the government are trying to remain activists, but they're also trying to go undercover. Let me tell you about the case of one such gentleman named Dia Harris. Last summer, the Department of Health and Human Services, now headed by RFK Jr., said that its chief equity officer, Mr. Harris, embodies the DEIA commitment. They threw in A for accessibility, but it's DEI. Here is how Mr. Harris introduced himself in a speech he delivered. "Greetings and salutations. I am Dia D. Harris, ACF, Chief Equity Officer. My pronouns are he, him, EL, and IL. I am unapologetically a black man." On his LinkedIn profile, Mr. Harris wrote, "I authentically live as an unapologetically blackety black man." Keyword there, I guess, is black, emphasizing, calling attention to his race. All things are race with this guy. But the Biden administration, along, you know, their Health and Human Services Department and Mr. Harris, then conspired to change his true role after the elections didn't go their way. Gone was his title of Chief Equity Officer. Now he would be the Chief Organizational Development Officer. Gone was his profile on LinkedIn. There was no longer any evidence that he had been a DEI activist for over 20 years, and he apparently is still employed by the agency. His profile suggests that he aims to steer personnel policy under the Trump administration, quote, providing consulting and guidance to senior stakeholders on strategic planning, leadership development, and talent management. In a video that was made when he was still a part of the Biden administration, Mr. Harris had an appearance in a national call to action on equity. Keep in mind now, equity replaces equality. Said the following: "We must embed equity into every aspect of our lives, from our personal interactions to our professional endeavors. By integrating equity into our daily practices and decision-making processes, we can create lasting and building a more equitable society for future generations." All right. He's not the only one. According to Luke Rosiak from Daily Wire, the Department of Labor's Director of Office of Workers' Compensation Programs wrote to the staff that he was changing the title of a diversity czar. Quote, effective December 15, 2024, Paige Brown, the Office of Workers' Compensation Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Accessibility Officer will transition to the Division of Administrative Operations, where she will take on an expanded role in support of our mission. This evolution, reflects the natural growth of her responsibilities and expertise, et cetera, et cetera. He also wrote that Sybil Wyatt, a DEI analyst, would also move to something called Administrative Operations Office. She had previously been Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer for Veterans Hospital and Director of Affirmative Action for a local college. Now, just 4 days after taking office, Donald Trump's Office of Personnel Management had directed agencies to, quote, terminate to the maximum extent allowable by law all DEI and DEIA and, quote, environmental justice, close quote, offices and positions within 60 days. Agencies can and should begin issuing reduction in force notices to employees of these agencies now. So this is the game that they are playing. And it's not just at federal agencies. And, of course, they're being called out. Other people are pointing out that they're trying to hide. PBS has sent out earlier this month a staff-wide email announcing the departure of the public broadcasting network's two DEI executives. To ensure that we are complying with the president's executive order, we have closed our DEI office, and Cecilia Loving and Gina Lowe are leaving PBS. I know you will join me in wishing them well in their future endeavors. Okay. What was interesting is that this announcement came suspiciously on the same day that Josh Code from the Free Press is the online news site created by former New York Times newswoman Barry Weiss, said, quote, the timing of the announcement raised eyebrows in the Free Press newsroom because earlier that morning we wrote to PBS asking them about a tip we received from a high-ranking executive at the network. The tipster had told us that PBS was planning to move both Ms. Loving and Ms. Lowe to the network's Station Services Department in order to skirt Donald Trump's executive order calling for the elimination of DEI-focused positions. Quote, the employee population at PBS loves DEI, the source told the Free Press. They're unwilling to change. They're unwilling to adjust. They're unwilling to make concessions in order to protect the sustainability of PBS. Instead, they were trying to play chicken and move things around and try different things to circumvent the executive order. Originally, PBS had planned to move the two women executives into a, quote, wellness department, close quote. Then they dismissed that idea in favor of placing them into the station services department. Jason Phelps, the senior director of external communications for PBS, confirmed to the Free Press that they were let Ms. Loving and Ms. Lowe were let go minutes before their CEO sent her staff-wide email. Turns out federal funding comprises 15% of PBS revenue, about $215 million annually, some of which comes from its parent company, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. PBS had formally established its DEI department 4 years ago, hiring both women in order to, quote, look as carefully in the mirror and recognize that there may be areas where we are not doing our best, close quote. Ms. Loving earned almost $400,000 a year. The salary for her colleague, Ms. Lowe, was not listed. During her tenure, Ms. Loving introduced weekly Meditation Mondays and Indigenous Healing Circles for PBS employees to resolve conflict and, quote, create a safe space for courageous conversations, close quote. This according to PBS internal documents that the Free Press got their hands on. So, again, they got caught. And, of course, their DEI activities and their work there at PBS was radicalized, what you would expect from PBS. And, again, they can run and they can hide, but they won't get away with it. The Trump administration is on to these tactics. Lewis, as in Louis Armstrong, as in Satchmo. Hello, Dolly. It's a great documentary on his life. Anyway, it is 7 to 7 on the John Carlson Show. And I got to check in with my good friend, our noon to three host, Lars Larson, find out what's going on this First Amendment Friday.
Well, we could talk about national level stuff like the now allegedly $27 billion that was shuffled off to climate groups that were really Stacey Abrams and her Democrat friends. I mean, it's unbelievable the raid that the Biden administration brought about on public cash to be diverted for private Democrat. Yeah. And here's the thing.
See, here's the dividend. This is the dividend on Doge.
Yeah.
And that is, yes, they are saving lots of money. But you know what else they're doing? They are draining a patronage, a political patronage system that had been injected into all of these grants, all of these contracts, all of these, you know, arrangements and whatnot. They are being defunded. So it's defund the left. The people who want to defund the cops, they're the ones who are now being defunded.
And in support of what you said, I've been asking every expert I've talked to about this, tell me that you found any conservative groups who had their snout in the public trough. And so far, there haven't been any. And I guarantee you that if the left-wing mainstream, you know, legacy media were aware of an NRA or a Heritage or any of the conservative groups that had their snout in the trough, believe me, they'd be trumpeting it as their lead story.
Oh, of course.
This was a left-wing thing.
You are absolutely right, 100%. And by the way, if you hadn't heard, a federal judge, an Obama appointee, Chris Cooper is his name, has just upheld the president's authority to conduct mass layoffs of federal bureaucrats.
And the unions went to the wrong place. They weren't supposed to go to federal court. They were supposed to go to one of the federal labor agencies, and they neglected to do it. So, they did, as usual, the unions going the wrong way.
Well, no. I think they went the wrong way because they thought they were going to be able to get away with it. And they thought, you know, well, let's go to, we'll just file our case with an Obama judge in Washington, D.C. What could go wrong? Well, they just found out what went wrong. The Obama judge says, what they're doing is legal. May not be crazy about it, but it's legal. You don't want to miss Lars every day of the work week from noon to three here. Talk Radio 570 KVI, hour number two of the commute right in front of you. 7:03, second hour of the commute with Carlson this Friday. Well, why don't you start local here, young Zach? We got a bevy of great local stories people should know about. In case you're wondering why crime continues to spiral and we seem to see the same faces over and over again on TV being perp-walked or appearing in court, here's the latest example. Branson Albert is 37, not 17, not 27. He's a 37-year-old man facing 12 new felony charges against a one-man theft and car burglary wave. His chosen place of business would be SeaTac International Airport parking garages. He's charged currently with stealing three cars from the SeaTac garage in last month, as well as breaking into three other vehicles, stealing a gun from one of them. He has been in trouble for years, and they just keep pushing him back out onto the streets. It's an outrageous story. Here's Jeremy Harris from Como 4.
Now, Branson Albert was arrested and charged for stealing cars from the airport. He was released from custody, but then he was arrested again in a car that was stolen from the airport. In that case, he was released without bail. And now, take a guess of what he's facing 12 new felony charges for doing. New charges with a familiar story. Airport car theft suspect Branson Albert accused of breaking into travelers' cars at the SeaTac airport and also stealing cars while their owners are away. 12 new felonies, now part of what the prosecutor's office describes as a pattern.
It's incredibly frustrating to have these cases, you know, happen over and over.
Court records say
That's Casey McNerthney from the prosecutor's office.
Albert has had 33 warrants in the last decade, and he has at least six pending felony cases.
We now have the vehicle stationary in the 76 gas station parking lot.
Including his most recent arrest when Federal Way police shot at him while arresting him in a car that was stolen from the airport.
Now, there's only one thing about this story so far that I don't like, and that is this guy was released on his own recognizance by a judge who knew full well that he had six cases pending. So he's arrested for car theft, brought before the judge. The judge knows that there are these six other cases pending against him, and the judge let him out on his own recognizance. Not even $100 bail, which would be what you'd have to post for a $1,000 bond. Who is the judge? That's the one thing I wish the media would start including with every story. Who the hell is the judge? Who's doing this? Who's letting these people out? Now, sometimes they do mention the judge, and it's very helpful when they do, because let us remember, judges are public officials, and they are answerable to voters. They're elected, remember. They're answerable to voters for how well they're doing their job. So how about telling us who's letting these guys go? I would love to help make that judge famous. That is just sheer ineptitude, sheer indifference. It's not just stupidity. It looks like the judge is stupid, but the judge isn't stupid. The judge is just indifferent. Yeah, he'll probably go off and steal another car. So what? There is no reason why people who continue to break the law over and over and over again should be catching a break from a judge. So that's the problem I have. The only problem I have with Jeremy's story here is that he hasn't mentioned the judge. That judge should become a poster child for what we need to get rid of in the judiciary. Replace them with people who actually want to uphold the integrity of the law. Let's continue.
But when that case went before a judge in November, Albert was released on his own recognizance.
There's another judge.
Within
weeks,
police say he was back at the airport with at least six new victims whose cars were stolen or broken into. That even while he has a warrant for his arrest for this exact same crime, there he is at the airport again, stealing people's cars and breaking into cars. What options do the prosecutors have if this cycle just keeps going?
What prosecutors can and will keep doing is going back to court to show this pattern of behavior and to say this is why we think a high bail is still appropriate. Because when you have that violation of court orders, it's frustrating for everybody.
They need to publicize judges who are undermining, frankly, sabotaging the whole concept of accountability under the law. They're sabotaging it on purpose. Some of these woke judges are less than worthless. They are on the bench for the purpose of undermining the law. And this is just another couple of examples with the same guy. Again, 37 years of age, dozens of arrests, six pending cases, and when he's arrested again, they just let him go. Because, you know, I guess a car is not really that important. It's just property. You know, just property. If you don't own a home, a car is the most expensive, valuable thing that you have, and it's your ticket to your place of work. It's how you get around. It's how you exercise your freedom. Stealing a car should be seen as a very big deal, and all too often it is not.
Frustrating mostly for the victims who leave their cars in the garage and go out of town, then find their car to be stolen or ransacked. Police say Albert's crimes were captured on video, but he got away before Port of Seattle police could catch him. Now, stealing cars is one thing, but there are also guns involved here. In the November case when Federal Way police shot at him, they missed, but they said that he had a gun on him at the time that he was arrested. And in one of the recent theft cases here from the airport, Albert is accused of stealing a gun from one of the traveler's cars. He has multiple warrants out for his arrest, and I may have another update coming up on his case within the next few weeks.
Wow. Again, that's our friend Jeremy Harris. Good reporter. But I just wish that every time they do a story about a career criminal outrageously treated outrageously leniently by the court, that the judge who made that decision be identified. And for that matter, when the judge does his or her job and holds someone accountable for their actions, let us know who that judge is, too. That's someone worth keeping on the bench. But there's one more aspect of this case that is so emblematic, and that is it's only a small number of criminals within the criminal community, okay? Just never mind the massive majority of people who are law-abiding. Within the criminal community, those who don't follow the law, there's a small number who commit the vast, disproportionate amount of crime. This guy, Branson Albert, age 37, is one of them. If you would just start nailing these guys and closing the prison door for a long, long time on career criminals, in other words, cutting their career short, then you would see crime, both violent and nonviolent, freefall. That's all you have to do. That's the first thing you need to do. If you want to see crime go down, that is a guaranteed way of making it happen. Start throwing these guys behind bars for a longer period of time. All right. Second story. Chris Rakedahl, Washington State School Superintendent, was famous during COVID when he would hand down dictates to school districts and say, you had better comply or else, because this has the power of law. And yet, last year, when Initiative 2081, the Parents Have a Right to Know initiative, was passed by the legislature into law because they didn't want it to go on the ballot where it would have won by 35 percentage points and maybe taken down a few Democratic state representative or state Senate candidates. Chris Rakedahl, who initially said, well, this initiative doesn't really change that much, we can live with it, decided, no, wait, it does change things. So much so that I am advising school districts not to comply with the initiative. Don't comply with this initiative. Until a judge tells us we have to, don't just ignore it. You'll see that, of course, that wasn't his standard. When school districts weren't comfortable with his COVID dictates, it was, oh, no, you comply right now, yeah, or face consequences. Well, now, Chris Rakedahl, former Democratic state legislator, has issued a statement to all school districts telling them to ignore Donald Trump's executive order that resulted in a letter from the acting assistant secretary for civil rights at the U.S. Department of Education that DEI policies are to go away. Chris Rakedahl says, no, keep them in place. Ignore what they're telling you. The Trump administration says the department will no longer tolerate the overt and covert racial discrimination that has become widespread in this nation's education institutions. Chris Rakedahl said that the letter from the assistant secretary does not, quote, does not hold the power of law, close quote. Instead, he says, we are working with the state AG and considering legal action if the federal government attempts to freeze or recover funds from the state, federal funds from the state K through 12 schools. First of all, you can make a very good case that DEI policies are in violation of state law, namely I-200, which bars discrimination or preferential treatment in public education to any person or group based on race or sex, color, ethnicity, and national origin. DEI policies do precisely that. They treat students and staff differently because of race. That's what DEI policies are all about. That's why E for equity replaces equality. Equality is you treat everyone equally, the same. Equity is you treat people differently so they end up in the same place. So am I angry? Am I infuriated with Chris Rakedal for doing this? Yeah, the instinct is to be angry, but you know what? Chris Rakedal is doing all of us a favor. Chris Rakedal is going public, encouraging defiance of the Department of Education. And so, well, I guess they're kind of painting a target. Chris Rakedal is, by going public, is painting a target on Washington schools for publicly defying the DEI the mandate to do away with DEI policies from the federal government. So, again, this is Chris Rakedal, just couldn't help himself, has to go public so, you know, he can puff out his chest and, you know, say to the base, you know, I'm with you, we'll defy Trump. Well, what Trump is doing in opposing DEI is not only legal, it's desirable. DEI policies do not bring us closer together. It drives us further apart. Some of these activists are all about, know nothing about civil rights. Neither does Chris Rakedal. All he knows is racial politics. All they care about is racial politics and woke ideology. So I hope that this article is making its way back to Washington, D.C., and the Trump people say, oh, really? You're telling people to defy us, that our mandate to get away with to eliminate DEI policies doesn't have the force of law. Let's see about that. That we can't withhold federal funding. Let's see about that. So just as the Pramila Jayapals of this world were unintentionally helping the Trump campaign during the 2024 elections, woke bureaucrats like Chris Rakedal are doing the work of the Trump administration, making their job easier to identify the holdouts. All right, you got 21 minutes now after 7 o'clock in the morning, Friday morning, 21st day of February here on the John Carlson Show. Our good buddy, Zach, young Zach with a social media sweep, an especially good one coming your way. Good morning.
Oh, yeah.
So, young Zach, you think you're a big shot, did ya?
Well, at least for this week, while I'm filling in for the one and only Philip J. Vandervoort III.
Indeed, you are. Doing a great job. 25 after 7. Tell me what's going on in the social media world.
Well, what's going on in the social media suite brought to you by the Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Unfortunately, we did comedy in the last hour, and this hour is not nearly as funny. Some updates on Wednesday, we talked about the Sean Kemp cannabis store that was a victim of smash and grab robbery on Wednesday morning. And that's just a couple blocks here from our studio. This one, there another smash and grab at a cannabis shop happened again this morning, a little bit further away, but still relatively close up on Olive and Denny in Seattle and Capitol Hill.
Probably the same guys.
Yeah, and so that's being investigated right now. And what's interesting about this one, Sean Kemp's store down the road from us doesn't have any sort of barricades, bollards. There's no physical barricade that would prevent a car from getting to the building. This cannabis shop called Reef Cannabis, the Reef Cannabis, I guess. It's you'd recognize the building, a lot of murals and stuff on it up on the corner of Olive and Denny. They did have bollards, those big metal,
big metal or cement, basically blockades.
Yeah, like similar to a pedestrian a stanchion, but sizable enough to keep a car out. So they had those down kind of one side of the building. And down the other side of the building, but on the street corner, they couldn't have it. So it appears to me that the car was a Hyundai SUV that
was stolen.
Stolen, likely. Slammed into this caused structural damage. It went into the brick, into the building, not into the door, but they were able to get the door open.
Well, so in other words, they couldn't smash through the door.
Because there were those bollards in the way.
So they just went a few feet away and smashed into the building
into
itself.
Into the building itself. Bricks, rubble, you can see. I mean, it looks like a demolition site now. And unfortunately, I think for this shop, I suspect the damages will be much, much worse. Sean Kemp's, I noticed yesterday when I left, they had signs out that they're back open. I don't think that's going to be the case for this outlet. So,
Did they get in?
It appears they did get in, yeah. Como News saying there's substantial damage to a supporting wall, though. So,
How badly hit was the contents of the store?
That I have not seen yet. I don't know. Sean Kemp's store released, they let Como in and then immediately released
footage of the robbery. This doesn't seem to be out yet, but I'm sure we'll learn more soon. Another unfortunate story, city council member Tanya Wu found a person asleep in her car's back seat last night. She posted on her Instagram, "I had parked near 12th and Jackson, finishing a day of meetings. I unlocked my car door to get in and drive home, only to see a person in my back seat asleep. I opened the passenger side door and started yelling at him, but he won't get up. This person broke the window on the opposite passenger side door. I didn't see it till I wondered how he got in. Please always check the back seat when you get in your car. If I were anywhere else, I would be alarmed and scared that he was going to attack me. But being this is near 12th and Jackson, she implies that I'm just going to have to wait till he gets up." And that's a post. She posts a picture of
him.
That
or, you know, she could, you know, get in the car, go ahead, you know, start the engine and start driving down the road about 30 miles an hour and, oop, hit the brake.
I don't think
there's an alarm clock for you.
I don't know exactly what's going on in this case and why the cops were not called immediately. I don't know why she felt she needed to wait for him to wake up. She alludes
because,
to
because it's Seattle.
Well, of course.
No, I mean, no, you just asked the perfect question. Why, when someone sees someone in their, you know, broke the window in their car and are in the back seat sleeping, why would you let him sleep it off? Why wouldn't you do everything you could to get that person out of your car? And the answer is because it's Seattle.
If I got in my car, turned around and saw someone in the back seat, they'd be lucky if I called the cops.
Yeah. Again, you know, this is why God invented air horns, whistles.
Other things that make loud noises.
Yes. Like, the, you know, maybe they need, you know, a little encouragement on the bottom of their feet with a baseball bat or something like that.
I cannot imagine something more terrifying than getting in your car at night in Seattle and turning around and seeing someone asleep
someone
in the backseat.
Someone in your car. You know, it's just, again, so ridiculous that, but should we really be surprised that this happens?
In a later post, she implies.
With the culture being what it is.
She says she goes to Union Gospel Mission, not far from there, and asks if they can have someone come provide services to this individual.
Yeah, because that's all he needs is a meal.
Goodness.
And he'll be back on his feet.
He was housed first, I suppose.
Yes. Oh, it is 7:30. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. I think our good buddy, Steve Moore, our chief economist, and of course, frequent Fox News guest, going to be with us here in
allegedly
just a couple of minutes. Well, we'll make the time for him as the commute continues this Friday morning. Good morning to you. Is this Carole King singing about a broken relationship or the current state of the Democratic Party?
Oof.
Not sure. Anyway, welcome back, everybody, to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. That chuckling you hear, of course, is from our good friend and chief economist, Steve Moore, author of The Trump Economic Miracle. Great book, great read if you want to know what the next 4 years are going to look like right now, because he's got the receipts. And, of course, you see him on Fox News frequently. Good morning, Steve.
John, thanks for playing Tapestry, one of my favorite albums ever. And that's one of my favorite songs. So congratulations on your new gig. I'm gonna miss you on Fridays. But
oh, no, don't worry. More exposure than ever. You haven't gotten the letter yet, but we have arranged for Steve Moore to be our new morning host here, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, that would be fun. So you and I have been doing this gig for a long time, haven't we,
John? Yes, we have.
You've been doing it for a lot longer than I have. What? How many years?
8 years. Eight years.
Wow, awesome. Well, I am excited about your new ventures, and I'm excited about our country's new ventures, and things are going swimmingly right now.
I like
your analogy that I think the Democrats are tied in the knots. They can't figure out what to say, what to do. They seem to be defending all this government waste.
You know, they painted themselves into a terrible corner where they attacked DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, for rooting out waste and refused to justify refused to acknowledge
any waste. The
waste that existed. So they start giving examples of it, and here they are basically tied to defending indefensible waste, mismanagement, and fraud.
Well, I want to repeat a point that I think I made on your show last week, which is if you believe in big government and good government and, you know, you want government to help people, and I'm not a bleeding heart like some of my liberal friends are, but I respect them. But if you believe that, then you should understand that, you know, wasteful and inefficient and bad government is the enemy of good government. So why are they defending it? And the only explanation I can hear is maybe they profit off of it. You know, you look at where all the money is going. It's not going to help poor people. It's not going to help, you know, educate our kids and so on. A lot of it's just going right into the coffers of these left-wing advocacy groups, and they're getting rich off of it.
Well, and that is the dividend, if you will, of this effort. You know, the main thrust is to unearth and do away with billions and billions and billions of dollars in waste. But the dividend, Steve, is they're pulling the plug on the money flow to liberal and left-wing advocacy organizations.
That's right. And so there was a really interesting Fox report yesterday. No, I cannot confirm it, but they seem to have good sources for this, that tens and if not hundreds of millions of dollars of political ads that were run by to help Kamala Harris were funded by the same groups that that received billions of dollars from this climate change, you know, all the climate change federal dollars. And so that is totally illegal, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, to use federal money for campaign purposes is outrageous. Now they say, well, we didn't use this dollar for that, but, you know, money is fungible. And in my opinion, you can be involved in campaign efforts or you can take federal money, but you should not be able to do both, John.
Yes, carry out campaigning with federal money. That's a no-no.
Yes.
And this is, you know, the climate change pipeline is being exposed. All of these organizations, by the way, all of them are left of center.
Yes.
You don't see any conservative organization.
Right.
But I mean, that needs to be at the top of the list, that every single one of these advocacy groups, diversity groups, they all go to DEI activist organizations.
Yes, that's right.
So that pipeline has now been blocked and will soon be dismantled.
Hopefully. I mean, we saw that you saw that report by Lee Zeldin last week. He's the new EPA director.
Mm-hmm.
That they shoveled $20 billion, John, billion. That's more money than you make in a year. $20 billion dollars to all these, you know, climate change groups just days before Trump was coming in. So that now Lee Zeldin, to his credit, is saying, "Hey, wait a minute. You know, we want to claw that money back."
Right.
And they don't want to give the money back. So that's going to be quite an interesting legal battle.
And again, it's worth carrying on. They did claw back some of the money given to by health and or no, no, the Department of Homeland Security to luxury hotels for illegals in New York City. They clawed that money back. I mean,
I go to New York a lot. I can't afford to go to the luxury hotels, but I guess we can put the illegal immigrants in there.
I was going to say, you need to be better connected. Never mind your Wall Street connections. Do you know any illegal alien connections?
I need to get to know the mayor and his cronies. And but we have a report in our hotline today, and I know you read the hotline.
Yes.
Largely, you may not have seen it yet because it just came out. But it turns out, you know, on the whole welfare state, it turns out we spend twice as much money on welfare programs, all the, you know, the hundreds and hundreds of welfare programs in Washington. We spend twice as much money as it would take if we just gave people money. We could spend half that amount and we could move every single family out of poverty by just giving them money. Instead, we spend twice that amount and we still have 30 million people in poverty. Now explain that one.
Well, let me give you a historic context. When I was even younger than I am now, you know, back in the 80s, I remember that the statistic was we spend for the amount of money we are spending, we could on all these social programs, we could lift every American out of poverty above the poverty limit if we took all the money that we're spending on these programs and gave it to individuals. Now we spend twice as much money.
Twice as much. It's unbelievable. So then you wonder, well, then what happened to the money? And it went to this kind of welfare state blob. You know, in other words, the people who run the plantations are the one who make all the money. That's just the reason they don't really want to solve the poverty problem, because they rich, you know, as we said in our hotline, you know, all this anti-poverty, you know, welfare spending is helping a lot of people. It just isn't helping the poor people.
So I want to ask you about a pair of surveys, one by University of Michigan. One is a CNN poll released yesterday. The University of Michigan poll was released this morning, showing U.S. consumer confidence declining.
Yeah.
It's down 10% from January, which had been a reduction from December in the University of Michigan survey. The CNN poll says nearly two-thirds say that Donald Trump isn't doing enough to address inflation, and people now getting worried. What is Steve Moore's read on these polls?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what's happened, is that the inflation problem has not gone away. It's gotten worse over the last 4 months. In fact, if you look at the consumer price index numbers, Trump did not inherit a good economy. He inherited an economy that's a big mess. And I think that's an important point. Remember that Trump, the Biden people say, oh, everything's so good. All Trump has to do is just keep it as it is. No, this is a big cleanup operation we have. And it's going to take a few months, folks. I mean, you got to be patient here. The last 3 months, that would be, let's see, November, December, and January. Before Biden, you know, before Trump came into office, I love that. Did you see that Chuckie Schumer ran to the microphones after the latest report came out and say, see, Trump isn't solving the problem. He'd only been in office for 6 days.
Right.
but it is a problem. The inflation rate over the last 3 months has been running at about 5%, and people are angry about it, and they should be. And so it's going to take a little bit of time to solve this problem of inflation that was embedded. Now, why did it get worse in the last 3 months? Precisely the reason we were just talking about. Biden shuffled all this money out the door.
Last minute money.
You know this, you know, from Economics 100. It's when you got too many dollars chasing too few goods, what happens to the price of things? They go up. So this is a real challenge. And that's why what the Doge is doing, and why drill, baby, drill, and why deregulating the economy are so important, because we got to increase the amount of goods and services that are produced, and we've got to slow the flow of federal dollars, and when inflation will come down.
No, I think that that is what is going to happen, and the order it will happen. The way you've just
I want to remind your listeners, if I may, John, mm-hmm. because you and I are old enough to remember the Reagan years. That's how old we are, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, remember, it took Reagan 14 months to recover from all the crap of Jimmy Carter, and let's hope it doesn't take that long and then remember when Reagan's policies kicked in. Remember, we had the biggest boom ever. Same thing with Trump. You know, when he took over from Obama. So it is going to. I want people to be patient here.
Well, there's a lesson.
Yeah.
The lesson is they need to get that economic component of the package sooner rather than later, so people will see the benefits by the time the midterms come around.
Oh, but way before that, we need to get the. I don't understand. You know, I'm mad at the Republicans right now. Why are they taking so long to get this tax cut done? You got a popular president, you got a Republican House, Republican Senate. He has a voter mandate to do this, and they're dithering.
Yeah, this is no time. They need to. The sooner you get the tax cuts made permanent, in other words, the sooner you prevent taxes from automatically going up.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep.
The sooner you do that and make it permanent, the sooner the economic benefits will flow and we'll see the difference, and it will be well in advance of the upcoming midterms. So there will be political benefits as well as policy benefits.
There you go.
All right.
I couldn't agree more.
Great hearing from you, Steve Moore. I'm looking forward to seeing you sometime soon.
I'm coming out to Washington in April, so I look forward to seeing you, too.
We're going to let everybody know about that. Steve Moore on the John Carlson Show. Have a great weekend, Steve.
Okay, John, you too. Thank you.
It is Boeing time on the John Carlson Show. 7:47, The Commute with Carlson. Award-winning journalist Cheryl Atkinson right around the corner on The Commute with Carlson. All right, 7 minutes to 8 o'clock, The John Carlson Show, with one of my favorite people in or out of news media, Cheryl Atkinson. You see her every single Sunday on Como 4, Full Measure, nationally syndicated news magazine show and the best one, in my opinion. Good morning, Cheryl. How are you?
Good morning. Doing good. Thank you.
So I want to ask you, because one of the segments you're doing this Sunday is on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And I've never invested in Bitcoin because I just don't understand the world of cryptocurrency. Can you explain it to our listeners?
Well, I got hung up on that, too, when I first reported on this 4 years ago. And I do explain a bit of this Sunday in full measure, but I don't think I'll ever fully understand how Bitcoin is mined and the whole model. But I will tell you, if you had put in $1,000 4 years ago when I first reported on it, that $1,000 would be $12,000 today.
Oh.
And it's not for everybody. It's really volatile. So I would say don't put any money in Bitcoin that you can't afford to lose. But there are predictions it's going to go up to $1 million per coin. You can buy little bits, by the way. You can buy $10 worth. You don't have to buy a coin. So I would say it's worth figuring it out. And you'll hear this rare interview with Jeffrey Warnick, big investor, doesn't usually do on cameras, but he's going all in on Bitcoin. He thinks it's a good hedge against what he sees as a really disrupted monetary system and with our debt and a lot of problems. But, you know, he's all in for Bitcoin. I still say it's not for everybody, but, and he says that too. But you can learn a lot more in the interview on Sunday. Put some money in it. If you, you know, put little bits of money you can afford to lose, money for a dinner out, money you might spend on something else, and you might be really surprised at how that accrues.
How do you put money in?
So there's a lot of different ways. I went to, after I learned about it, Coinbase, which is a third party that can buy it for you, hook up to your bank account. You mm-hmm. start an account with Coinbase, but there's a lot of places that'll do it. I think you can do it directly and hold it in your own so-called wallet, which makes me very nervous. It's on your computer, and if you lose your computer, you might lose all your money. So it's a little complicated read up, but you could, you know, start an account with a third party like Coinbase and buy $50 worth and see what happens if you want to just do that much.
Well, if you had done that, your 50 bucks would be worth 600 4 years ago. If you
bought 50
bucks, it would be 600. So, Cheryl Atkison, all things Bitcoin, fascinating. And another reason to tune in to Full Measure, Sunday mornings, Como 4, 10 a.m., repeats 11:30 at night. Cheryl, have a great weekend, okay?
You too.
You got it. Coming up on 4 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you for letting me be part of your Friday again. Lovely. Always love saying Friday on the commute with Carlson.
I got to read this text real quick, John. It's from Robin Lakewood, and he points out, gee, pot shop robberies coincide with Philip J's vacation?
That's right. They were wearing masks, weren't they?
I will check his front and rear bumper when he returns.
That's right. I mean, I know he said he had a side gig. You know, everyone in radio does. I didn't know. It never occurred to me it could be that.
He said, yeah, he said a side gig was a smash hit. I just thought it
okay.
was.
Okay. All right. Well, we will find out on Monday, won't we? If you would like to send a text message to the John Carlson Show, all you need to do is text our phone number. That's 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. That's also the number you call if you want to be on the John Carlson Show. We don't take a lot of calls on this program, as you know, but every so often we like to do so. Okay. Article in the Seattle Times, and boy, are they furious. They are furious because the Trump administration not only is stepping up deportation of illegals, again, coming in categories of people who have committed crime, people who are criminals, people who are security risks, and people who have been ordered out of the country and have defiantly refused to do so. The administration has posted a video. They did so on Twitter, X, earlier this week, of a group of deportees. We want to get the right inflection on that.
Deportes.
I know, split the difference, right? Okay. Of a group of people being deported who are boarding a flight in chains. U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement video shot at Boeing Field a couple of weeks ago shows the deported, being thoroughly frisked, and then being allowed on the plane after they are chained. As the Seattle Times puts it, shows the ICE video shot at Boeing Field 2 weeks ago shows the deportees being thoroughly frisked. Why wouldn't you do that? For heaven's sakes, you're practically frisked when you board a commercial flight in this country. ICE officers then laid out chains on the ground, lined up as if for a chain gang, before the men were individually chained hand and foot. Officers wearing jackets with police ERO, standing for ICE's enforcement and removal operations, watched as the bound detainees trudged up the steps of the aircraft. Quote, it's part of the theatrics, says Maru Mora Villalpando, a volunteer with La Resistencia, a group that works to end detention and deportation of undocumented immigrants. They're not undocumented immigrants. They're illegals being flown out of the country because they've been ordered out by an immigration judge. These are people who are here illegally, who are not supposed to be here, most of whom have committed crimes. That explains why they're high on the priority list or our security risks. Quote, instead of being ashamed that people are treated this way, said Villalpando, the administration promotes such chain gang images to equate immigrants and criminals in the minds of the public. It's a civil system treated as a criminal one, says Mora Villalpando. But if they were criminals, they would have lawyers, which they don't. Okay, everything you just heard is a lie. Number one, they're not equating immigrants and criminals. They're equating illegals who are criminals with criminals.
Have you noticed this, John? I feel like this is a very recent uptick in social media and the left that they are heavily leaning on, that illegal immigration is a civil infraction.
It is not a civil infraction.
Well, even if let's just pretend it was for a second. You know who else has a civil infraction? Donald Trump.
The felon?
The felon.
Yes.
The rapist, as they like to say.
It is, again, remember, the Democrats wanted to make it a civil infraction. They campaigned to do that in 2020. Remember, that was one of their big issues. But it is a crime to enter this country illegally. And people who come here illegally are not immigrants. People who come here legally are immigrants. Again, this entire movement is a lie. Everything, the way they talk, their phraseology, their reasoning, it's all about trying to give a platform to a lie. And it's not going to work anymore. Quote, it's a civil system treated as a criminal one. No, it's a criminal one. When you're ordered out of the country, you don't leave, you're a criminal. When you are in this country illegally committing crime, you're a criminal. She said, if they were criminals, they would have lawyers, which they don't. Yeah, I bet all of them had lawyers. You know why? Because La Resistencia and other advocates for illegal immigration make sure that they have lawyers. Oh, and by the way, Mora Villalpando is herself an illegal immigrant. She is so, here she would be talking about illegals shouldn't have to live in the shadows, while she, as an illegal immigrant, was brazenly holding press conferences on behalf of illegal immigrants. I think it was, it may have been the Obama administration that let her stay for no good reason. She was defiantly illegal. But that's, again, that's just part of the problem. All I have to say to the administration for doing this is thank you. And yes, I like the fact that they are now showing on video these flights leaving out of Boeing Field, because Dow Constantine tried to sabotage immigration law by refusing to allow these flights out of Boeing Field, which is run by King County, in defiance of the law, by the way. He did this at the behest of advocates for illegal immigration. Again, the line that they love to use is, well, we, you know, immigration law is purely federal. So only the federal government should be exercising and enforcing immigration law. Local governments, local police departments should have nothing to do with it. And that includes to any cooperation with ICE means we're helping to enforce federal law, and we should not be doing that. And then yet, here was Dow Constantine going out of his way not only to not help enforce immigration law, but to actively undermine it by refusing to allow these flights out of a airfield built on federal land that was deeded to King County on the condition that the federal government would always be able to use it. So it is very easy to get very angry very quickly with advocates for illegals because they're just intellectually dishonest from beginning to end. The Seattle Times writer was plainly irked that Elon Musk, quote, the president's billionaire advisor and owner of the social media platform X, posted the video of the illegals boarding the aircraft with the comment, ha ha, wow, with emojis of a troll and a gold medal. Yeah, I say go ahead and rub the noses of these illegal alien activists and King County officials. Rub their noses in it. Show that footage of these flights leaving Boeing Field. Quote, these deportation flights out of Boeing Field now occur weekly, typically on a Tuesday, with planes arriving from other states to bring, quote, undocumented immigrants. The Seattle Times can't bring itself to call them illegal immigrants, even when they're being deported for being here illegally. All of these flights are monitored by La Resistencia volunteers in a room provided by the King County Executive's Office through the airport, where they can view the activity on two screens and count the people getting on and off to keep a tally of how many are being transported. Well, go ahead and let them count. Fine with me. The latest deportation flight from Boeing Field took place this past Tuesday. The jet in question where that people, the illegals were boarding, headed for El Paso, Texas. From there, the deportees may be sent back to their countries of origin. And I will give the Seattle Times credit for pointing out that the lawsuit challenging Dow Constantine's authority to ban these flights, which prevailed and forced the reversal of Dow Constantine's policy, that lawsuit started under the Trump administration. The Biden administration did not end the lawsuit. They continued the lawsuit, and they won in court. Quote, with Dow Constantine's order voided, Signature Aviation, one of the companies that services private planes at Boeing Field, agreed to take on the deportation flights they resumed in May of 2023. That is a good thing. ICE spokesman David Yost confirmed nothing was unusual about the flight depicted in the video. He says he's seen the same process across three administrations, from Trump to Biden and now Trump again, and that the chains are standard law enforcement security procedures. Of course they are. Again, many of the people on these, of the illegals on these flights are violent criminals. Why would you let them have the run of the aircraft? Is that an intelligent thing to do? When you're taking people who, many of whom have committed violent crimes, and sending them back to their country of origin where they don't want to go, and yet somehow it's inhumane to make sure that they are handcuffed and chained so they can't create trouble on an airplane in mid-flight. What they call inhumane strikes me as common sense. It's what you would expect. It's not like you're humiliating them by chaining them on a commercial flight. Everybody's on that plane for the same reason. They're all here illegally. They've all been ordered out, and they're all headed home. So do what is necessary to guarantee the safety of the flight. All right, you got 18 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock this morning on the John Carlson Show. Big doings in Germany. The election for their national leadership is this Sunday. We'll be talking about it on Monday's show if we have results in, and we probably will because, unlike the United States of America, most European countries manage to hold elections with hundreds of over 100 million voters, and yet they seem to get their results in on the same day, the same night anyway. You have the incumbent chancellor of Germany, Olaf Scholz, who is basically has the same politics as Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. They are facing opposition from two parties that are right of center. There's Friedrich Merz from the Christian Democratic Union. He's got about 30% of the vote, polls show. And the AfD, the Alternative for Germany, that is the so-called right-wing party, which is polling at 22%. In a distant third is the party of Olaf Scholz, the incumbent chancellor. They got about 15% of the vote, and the Green Party, the radical left, with about 14%. So, if you will, the conservative parties, you know how it works? They use the parliamentary process. So if your party prevails and you either outright with a majority or you put together a governing coalition with other parties that are similar to yours, your guy gets to, or your gal gets to be the chancellor or the prime minister or the president. So the right of center parties are so far polling at about 52%, and the Social Democrats and the Greens are coming in with about a combined total of 30%, and other minor parties make up the balance. So it looks like Germany might be moving toward the right, and we'll see how far to the right. This is a good thing. You keep hearing that from the so-called mainstream media and the Democratic Party in this country and liberal activist organizations that the AfD party is like a Hitler-like party, a dark right-wing party. Hey, Hitler was not right-wing. Hitler was left-wing. Nazi stands for National Socialist Party. Socialists are not on the right. Socialists are on the left. All right, it is 22 minutes after 8 o'clock. Young Zach with his favorite segment of the day, the last one of the week. Social media from socialists on The Commute with Carlson. Good morning. 27 minutes after 8 o'clock, here's young Zach, social media from socialists.
Boy, howdy, do I have a socialist for you, John. Have you heard what's going down in Huntington Beach?
No.
It involves a right-wing city council.
Oh, is this a former football punter?
And a former punter, former Seahawk, actually,
for
sort of.
Minnesota Vikings?
Yeah,
so yeah, I think he was with the Seahawks for about 20 minutes.
Yeah, The story centers around the Huntington Beach City Council, the Huntington Beach Library, and their 50th anniversary, and former NFL punter, really good punter actually, Chris Cluey, who spent 8 seasons on the Vikings and was a Seattle Seahawk on the practice squad in 2005 to kick off his career. So the Huntington Beach Library celebrating their 50th anniversary, they wanted to put a commemorative plaque on site, and so the design of the plaque was very normal, nothing crazy. I think there's an eagle and a flag on it. And as the city council members and the library board and donors and whatever, and they added a slogan to it, which they've now confirmed was intentional. And it's not a slogan, just says magical, alluring, galvanizing, and adventurous. And the first letter of each of those words is a little bit bigger, so it clearly says MAGA.
Okay.
And it's, from what I can tell, a fully conservative...
You are so cynical.
Yes. Fully conservative city council. They've confirmed that that was fully intentional and that was important.
Okay.
So there was a public hearing or some sort of...
Is that any different from a library saying celebrating hope and change?
Exactly. So here's the one-minute testimony from the former NFL punter. And this is what he said, and we'll go over what happened after.
So instead, I'm going to take my time to say what MAGA has stood for these past 3 weeks. MAGA stands for trying to erase trans people from existence. MAGA stands for resegregation and racism. MAGA stands for censorship and book bans. MAGA stands for firing air traffic controllers while planes are crashing. MAGA stands for firing the people overseeing our nuclear arsenal. MAGA stands for firing military veterans and those serving them at the VA, including canceling research on veteran suicide. MAGA stands for cutting funds to education, including for disabled children. MAGA is profoundly corrupt, unmistakably anti-democracy, and most importantly, MAGA is explicitly a Nazi movement. You may have replaced a swastika with a red hat, but that is what it is. I will now engage in the time-honored American tradition of peaceful civil disobedience.
So now he's running up to the city council podiums.
Get the heck!
And the police are arresting him and carrying his limp body out of the city hall. So that's what Chris Cluey decided he felt he needed to do.
Obviously trying desperately to be the Colin Kaepernick of retired
which football
players.
Which we've always said, you know, why listen to athletes? If we're not going to listen to athletes, we're sure as heck not going to listen to punters. but wait till there's such a glorious ending to this whole thing. The city council unanimously passed the design of the plaque. They even made an amendment. And so the amendment at the bottom of this plaque, they said, very normal, eagle, flag, all the normal stuff you'd have for something like this. At the bottom, it still says magical, alluring, galvanizing, and adventurous, with each letter big. And then they added an extra line at the bottom. It says, through hope and change, our nation has built back better to the golden age of making America great again.
Oh, I love it.
So a little ray of sunshine out in California.
A little sop to the Obama people with the hope and change, a little sop to the Biden people with the Build Back Better and arriving in the appropriate destination. That's wonderful. All right. When we come back, State Representative Jim Walsh giving us the lowdown on the five big issues in the state capitol, Olympia. If you didn't hear it earlier, you want to hear it now. The update on five issues, all of which matter to you, coming right up on The Commute. Five big issues alive in Olympia. All of them affect you. What is their status? I spoke early yesterday with State Representative Jim Walsh, also chairman of the State Republican Party, to get an update, find out the answers. And it starts with the Parents' Rights Bill. Here, have a listen. I want to start with the Parents' Rights Movement and the status of the attack on the initiative, the dismemberment of the initiative that the legislature passed just a year ago.
And that really is the galvanizing piece. Correct. Last year, there was an initiative to the legislature. So it started out with the people and the petitions. People will remember signing it. It was Initiative 2081, and it created a Washington State Parents' Bill of Rights. It's important to point out that the Parents' Bill of Rights is primarily, really exclusively, about notification. It's about things that custodial parents or legal guardians of minor children must be told about that their children may experience, mostly related to school. But a number of the points in the Bill of Rights have to do with health care or mental health care. So if the child is seeing a therapist or a counselor, the parents have to be informed. Now, it doesn't touch other elements of the law. It's simply about notification and information. The parents have to be told. It passed through the legislature nearly unanimously. In the state Senate, it was unanimous. And then in the state House, it was about an 85-12 vote or something like that. So overwhelmingly bipartisan, almost unanimous, became law. Now, some of the legislators on the far left are trying, as you say, to overturn it. They have a bill in the state House and a bill in the state Senate that each try to overturn the Parents' Bill of Rights. And they've made some very misleading arguments about overturning it. And one state senator in particular, Senator Peterson out of Seattle, has really gotten caught in the spokes of the thing by giving a couple of ill-advised media interviews where he said things that are simply false. And it has energized just not just legislators, but the people in a good way. I believe that we will either stop the attacks on the Parents' Bill of Rights, or if one happens to slip through, I believe there will be other action, maybe another initiative, maybe other action in response that will be stronger still. So no, that's great.
The real news would be not the attack on an initiative that was overwhelmingly passed by pretty much the same legislature.
Correct.
But the blowback when the legislature turned around and said, we're dismantling it. Here, by the way, is what Jamie Peterson, he's the Senate Majority Leader, is senator from the most liberal district in Seattle. We're talking Capitol Hill University District, part of South Seattle as well. Here is Jamie Peterson telling parents what rights they don't have.
Young women have, if they're old enough to get pregnant, they're old enough to make their own decisions about what happens with their bodies. Okay? And parents do not have the right to change that or make a different decision or be notified in advance.
Or be notified. So a school can help a 14-year-old girl get an abortion. A school can help a 14-year-old girl get an abortion and not even notify the parents, let alone get permission. If the girl wanted her.
That is a false statement.
What?
That is a false statement. That's a false statement. That the Parents' Bill of Rights says the parents do need to be notified.
Right.
And it's good law. The ACLU and other groups went to court to try to get the Parents' Bill of Rights overturned. And even our left-leaning state courts here in Washington said, no, the Parents' Bill of Rights is good law. It is unconstitutional. I'm sorry. It is not unconstitutional.
Fully constitutional.
Mm-hmm. And it's good law. So the statement that parents do not have a right to be notified, that is false.
And
they do have a right to be notified.
And then he said that when it comes to mental health, 13-year-olds have a right to choose their own mental health treatment, and parents don't need to be part of that process. Parents don't even need to be notified. They have no such right. That's another thing Senator Peterson said, Jim.
Yes, and he's confusing two different sections of state law. One section says that in certain cases, minor children can get health care and other services without parental permission. That is true. That's a separate section of law. But the Parents' Bill of Rights says if the child is receiving the health care, including mental health care, the parents do have a right to be told that it's happening. So they are two separate issues in the law. Two separate sections of the law, and the senator, in my opinion, I think he's doing it knowingly, but who knows?
No, he's a lawyer. He's a pretty good one, too. Jamie knows better than that.
Right. He's conflating these two issues to make a political point, and he's been caught. That's the main thing. The media, which often will ignore these kinds of political statements, actually has caught him on this. And so that has been helpful. It's been helpful in shining a light on some of the misleading types of political rhetoric that the left uses in Olympia. So this has been a good thing. I mean, it's been painful, John, but it's been a good thing in that we are able to show people how the left can be misleading. And it is translating into some better coverage and better responses,
right,
both in the media and in the legislature, to some of the other issues you mentioned.
Yes, and we'll get to those in just a moment. But not only is he conflating, but he's also revealing. He is revealing the attitude of the opponents to parents' rights. It's almost this condescending attitude toward parents, Jim.
Yes.
That you don't have a right to know these things. You don't.
And it is something that parents and families have sensed but not always known in our politics, that the left truly believes it knows better than parents and grandparents and family members, that they know better what a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old should be doing, how to raise that child. And it is a fundamental ideological blinder that these left-wing politicians have. And they've gone so far that they've kind of outed themselves. They've shown the arrogance and the condescension of their ideology.
Yes. So a couple of other issues we wanted to talk about here. Get the latest update as of this morning in Olympia. Let's start with what's called the RUC, the road usage charge, which would be basically a toll. Everyone would have to pay a 2.5-cent toll for every mile they drive. And then there's a tax on top of that tax that would be used for transit. What is the status
Correct.
Of this bill? Well, because I heard that.
So this is an old dog trying to learn new tricks in Olympia. It is not a new idea. It is an idea that that, again, some left-leaning politicians in Olympia have been kicking around for a few years now. It is the RUC, the road utilization charge, also called the per-mile tax. Some describe it as a toll, as you do. So it is the same idea, that in addition to paying a tax on the purchase of gasoline and diesel fuel, which you're already doing, you would pay this extra tax based on the number of miles you drive each year. In some cases, the mechanics of it are that you would, when you renew your car tabs once a year, you would have to report your mileage, and then the Department of Licensing would compare it to your mileage last year and put a surcharge on your tab renewal of hundreds or even thousands of dollars to get your new tabs each year. The other part of the proposal is you would actually put a device in your car or truck, a GPS device, that would track your mileage on a regular ongoing basis. Both options are very unpopular with people. The overwhelming public comment on the proposals has been negative. Right. When people have that chance to log on the internet and say, I'm for or I'm against this, overwhelmingly negative, 97-98% of thousands of responses say no.
200 people in favor when the hearing was held, 19,800 rounded up to 20,000. 200 for the road usage charge, 20,000 signing in opposed. That gives you an idea. So does this have a chance of passage?
I think it will not pass this year, Joe. They're not going to give up on the idea, but the popular outrage has been so strong about it. And we're at a time where other taxes are being increased at such a rate. I think even my very left colleagues in Olympia know that this is not ready for prime time. Let's be diplomatic. It's it's a cake that is not fully baked, I do not think it's going to pass.
Oh, right. That is good news. We've got a few minutes left here. Rent control. What is the status of rent control right now?
Yeah, this one I'm not as optimistic. This one may get through. This is another not new idea. Mm-hmm. The left has been trying to press for some form of rent control in Washington for years now. And I think this is a priority that they're not going to give up on. They want to create a system by which landlords, property owners, people who've got a house to rent or an apartment building they own, will be structured. They will be told by the state government what and how they can charge rent. It is a almost religious belief on the far left that this is a matter of justice and that property owners are greedy and conniving and exploiting renters. The problem with it, John, is we've seen in other places around the country where rent control has been experimented with, it creates more scarcity in apartments and houses to rent.
What they really need are more people in the apartment business. That's what they really
need. Correct. And we've got all these permitting and regulatory restrictions on building a new apartment building.
Okay.
That if you want to lower rents, let's increase supply. I mean, it's a supply and demand issue.
Again, that is Jim Walsh giving us an update on some of the big issues in Olympia. And we're going to get another update on Monday's show because these issues are fluid. They can change up or down depending on momentum and moods in the state capitol. It's just very interesting that there appears to be a little more stronger conservative sentiment in Olympia than a lot of people believe there would be. And it's all coming from outside Olympia. How about that? Call it the KVI difference. All right. It is coming up on 10 minutes to 9 o'clock, The Commute with Carlson. It's 6 minutes to 9 o'clock. And we got the weekend right in front of us here, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vandervoort III will be back on Monday. Young Zach will be with us next week as well. What a great job he did filling in, doing the job of two, and doing it very well. So thank you, Young Zach. One last story. If you haven't heard, the week Friday starts out very well for Donald Trump. A federal judge, an Obama judge at that, has issued a ruling that Donald Trump can carry out mass terminations of federal employees. He denied a motion from unions representing federal employees to try and at least temporarily block the layoffs from going forward. The judge said that he is, quote, duty-bound to decide legal issues based on even-handed application of law and precedent, no matter the identity of the litigants, or regrettably at times the consequences of the rulings for average people. In other words, I'm here to be a judge. I'm not a politician. So good for him for doing the correct and legal lawful thing.